2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com, follow us on Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Hello, and welcome to Voices of Reason. I am Jason Lee, and my partner, Amy Donaldson.
Hello.
And today, we're going to be talking about airport transportation and how it's changed. In our case, we're getting the first new hub airport in the 21st century here in Salt Lake City. And we'll be discussing this with Bill Wyatt. He's the Executive Director of Airports for Salt Lake City, and Mike Williams, the Program Director for Airport Redevelopment for the Salt Lake City International Airport. Thank you both for joining us today.
Thank you. Thank
you. Good morning. I have many questions, so I can't wait for this. When Jason emailed me about this topic, I was like, oh, yes.
So what I think is great about this is just talking to you guys, learning what is required to build what we hope will be an efficient, safe as it can be, travel facility for something that was built. Nancy's been telling me for something like 10 million people, and we have like 26 million going through it today. So it's being operated above its capacity pretty well, considering the difference. So I'm going to start with you, Bill. You're in the process of putting together like a $3.6 billion redevelopment, essentially starting building an entirely new airport.
Correct. And this has been the product of a lot of conversation between the city, who owns the airport, and the airlines, primarily Delta, but not exclusively, because this is a partnership, and their support and enthusiasm is required in order to build the new airport. But they're so committed to this marketplace that they finally concluded that they needed a new modern airport that could operate as a hub, which the current airport was never designed to do.
Now, when you say hub, like, do you mean, for me, that means like I can go anywhere in the world from this airport. What do you mean by hub?
Well, that's part of it. The other part of it is that Delta has a lot of connecting passengers here, people who never actually get out of the airport. They stop here, get off their plane, hopefully grab a bite to eat, buy something, then get on another plane and fly to some other market. That's a more conventional hub. But because of all of those passengers, we have so much more direct nonstop service than a community of this size would ordinarily have. So think we have 99, I think, currently nonstop destinations from Salt Lake City. If we didn't have the connecting passengers, it would probably be more like 50.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. So all those people that take up all the seats in the airport, though, we need those to have
the convenience of a straight through
flight to Paris.
And they're also their presence is helping to pay for the construction of the new facility.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Real quickly, I need you to. So, I'm learning everything from Nancy kind of off the air here, is that we don't pay anything. We, as residents of the Salt Lake City area, we're not paying for the airport. Travelers pay for that and the airline.
User fees.
Right?
Yep.
Yeah.
So essentially, people who come and either they're passengers and the airlines themselves pay you rent and all this kind of thing. And it essentially creates your operating revenue.
Correct.
So what are the advantages? So I just had this experience because I had to fly back and forth to Anchorage. And Anchorage had, one of the smaller airports that I've ever been to. The International Terminal was three glass rooms down a hallway. So easy to navigate. Never got lost. Now they've changed it. They've expanded their airport. All my favorite airports are getting big. What's the advantage to having, having to use a train. Like, you know, you go to Denver or something like that where you have, or Seattle where you have huge airports. And why do we want that here?
Well, I think the contribution that airports make to the economy of a region is really extraordinary. And so a lot of the growth that you're seeing happening on the Wasatch Front and the tech development is not unrelated to the presence here of a big hub airport. Because when businesses look at growing or they look at expanding or relocating, having a hub airport is incredibly important because people need to travel. They need to get from point A to point B as quickly and efficiently as possible. Consider that every day, 15,000 people get up and go to work at Salt Lake International Airport. So it's an enormous employment center and produces tremendous economic benefits for the community. The construction of the new facility will generate an economic impact, just the construction, of over $5 billion to the local community. So they're huge economic generators. The University of Utah wouldn't be what it is today, and it's an enormous, powerful institution without the availability of this airport, because so much of the activity they're engaged in involves travel.
Well, and I just covered the newest ski resort that they're going to try to build. It's the first time in like 30 years mm-hmm. that the U.S. has had a new ski resort. And one of the advantages, they said, is you can fly in, drive from the airport to that ski resort, and you never hit a stoplight, which I hadn't thought about. But being 30 minutes from a mountain,
it's incredible.
From an airport, I can't think of another place like that.
It's so amazing to be out in the airport on a regular day and in the winter. And if there's powder in the air, the ski bags are flying. And in fact, in the new airport, the facility is being built with wider baggage facilities so that you can input skis at any point along the way. The other unique thing about Salt Lake, of course, is that this is a two-season tourist town. Usually, most places have, you get one. We have two, and it really helps make the airport even more successful.
So, Mike, when you come up with a design or when you're considering a design, what are the kinds of things you need to think about that are going to make this the best experience for all those people who are coming either to ski in the winter or they're coming to recreate and hike and do everything outside in the summertime?
So the first thing you have to do is assemble an integrated team of all of the users, the people who have interest in the airport, especially the airlines, so that it's designed properly right from the beginning. Bill mentioned a hub airport. So a hub airport has a particular configuration, parallel concourses. So you want the planes to be able to get in and out easily. Today, our concourses are finger piers, so they're not very efficient. They're kind of alleys for mm-hmm. getting the planes in and out. So you start on the outside with the airfield, make that very efficient. And then the same thing inside the building. You want it to be a seamless travel experience for the folks.
To make it just easier go from one place to the next.
Sure.
So how many do you bring in, like, moms who have to travel with kids? Do you bring in people who have... Like, I noticed some airports are doing some pretty creative things to make sitting in an airport, like a layover, or I usually take the red-eye flight to Anchorage because it's cheaper. But I noticed people are doing... you know, the massage or the little workstations.
Okay, before you get
we
to
have
that,
those. We got a break? I always do this.
That's okay, though. So now we set you up for what you got to think about. There's a lot of stuff coming back. So we're going to continue and find out what are the kinds of things and massages. I like that idea, by the way. We'll be talking about that more when you listen to The Voices of Reason.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Voices of Reason. I'm Jason Lee, along with Amy Donaldson. And today we're talking about how to build a better airport, because all of us like traveling. And in fact, I guess you and I both in the last month have been traveling.
I've been doing a
places.
Lot of airport, hanging out at the airport. Actually, unless you have to hang out there, you really don't care. You
right.
just want to get off your flight, get your stuff, and leave,
and move
right?
on.
Yeah. So the thing I've noticed about airports is they're better at like accommodating. So it used to be the food was so gross. And the choices were so limited, especially if you didn't get in the Delta terminal. If you were in the other, if I was flying some discount airline, then you better pack your lunch. But now there's full on restaurants. But I noticed just the time there, it isn't so uncomfortable. It's not so torturous.
So today we're speaking with Bill White. He's the executive director of airports for Salt Lake City, and Mike Williams, who's a program director for airport redevelopment for Salt Lake City International, which is undergoing like a $3.6 billion redevelopment. And, in a few years, we'll have essentially what is a new airport, considering what we already had, what I thought was a pretty efficient setup. But, Bill, Amy was asking you, do you ask
Who do you have on this committee that sort of plans out where things are, how things work? Like, who do you have? Is it mostly official people, or do you bring in regular people?
What the airport here did was pretty unique. They first took surveys of the traveling public, the local users, just everybody who is involved at all in the airport. And they collected someplace in the neighborhood of 4,000 comments and took all of that into consideration when the airport was being designed. Now, some of them are clearly the obvious ones. I want great Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
But you start there.
Lots of places to charge my devices. Huh?
And so some of the other comments were bring the beauty of Utah into the building. So that really provided us a couple of things. One is lots of windows so you can see outside. And then also utilize that light that we have here in Utah so that we can be more energy efficient. So it really takes a real collection of folks to take that and, translate it into the design and then into the construction documents.
I have a question. Have you ever thought of putting a movie theater at the airport?
Well, it's interesting that you ask that. I am originally from Portland, Oregon. I ran the airport there. And,
I was just in Portland with my dog.
Okay. All right. Well, the airport was approached actually by the community of short filmmakers got a grant to build out the space. And I think we'd need something like that because we can't just contribute to that. We're required to generate income from this. But it's really popular, and it's extraordinary. So you can go in there if you've got a 45-minute break in between flights. You can go in and watch three or four little videos, some of which are really quite nice. It'd be great. It's the only one I know of, really, in the U.S.
Yeah.
If you go to a place like Singapore, they have a full-on movie theater because people will be there for 12 hours. But
I think there are people now in our airport who have pretty significant layovers. I had a sister who had a 7-hour. She's coming from South Carolina to Alaska, and she had like a 7-hour layover.
If you're doing an international connection, you can end up with a pretty good layover.
Yeah. Is there any way that to make it sustainable that it could be something that people from the outside could participate in? Like, say, my sister was coming in and had a 7 or 8 hour layover, because it used to be I could go out to the airport, hang out with them, have dinner.
Right.
It was always somewhere gross, but at least we could hang out together. And now they have these restaurants, but I don't have access to them because I don't have a ticket. And she has to come out, and we have to go somewhere. And it just makes it hard.
Mm-hmm.
You stay there, but it's hard when you have family here, and it's kind of like, almost distressing.
Yeah.
Like, I should go. Let's just go and go through the drive-thru. There's a gas station out there now, and I think they have a restaurant at a fast food restaurant.
Costa Vida.
Last time, that's where we ate.
So there are airports. Seattle is doing this. There are a couple of others that are experimenting with the support and cooperation of the TSA with allowing non ticketed individuals into the secure area of the airport. I'm not prepared to suggest that we're going to do that right away because we want to open the new facility and get it operating and make sure all the bugs are worked out before we make a change like that. But I like the idea. Just for that very reason, particularly at a hub airport, you may have a family member, for example, or a friend who's flying through and has an hour layover, and you can go out and say hi and greet them without having to clog up security, sending somebody out and back through again. And so we'll see. I think it's an idea that will be embraced.
Mike, I want to throw out an idea for you because, to what they're talking about, since you have, all this extra acreage, if you might build a section that says, okay, these are the people who you still have to go through some amount of security because you're at the airport. However, these are the people who are not traveling. And if you need to be able to be over there, you don't have to have, you can't bring any extra stuff. You can walk out with your wallet and your phone. But
I thought you were going to suggest you have all these extra acreages. How about a golf course? This is Mr.
Well,
Golf.
No. First of all, we already killed that, so that's not coming back. And by the way, the deal that they had on that was the only reason that was able to happen because they were getting the land for such a cheap price. The FAA won't allow that to happen anymore. So, because is it possible that, like she said, that maybe you build a terminal? That's a bit much, but an area that might just be able to accommodate something like that, or is that just kind of a non-starter there?
That definitely sounds like something that is not what the airport's intended to do.
Yes.
There's all kinds of, Bill can tell you, there's all kinds of requirements and regulations, and the FAA has a say. So the airport is intended to accommodate the traveling public. So we do want you to enjoy yourself when you get to the airport. We want you to get through, if you're going somewhere, get through security and be as quickly as and efficiently as possible, and then enjoy all of the restaurants and the retail places. The restaurants are not going to be gross. So,
okay, so I have a question then for my traveling experience. I think you guys should take a cue from Disney. They make standing in line so distracting. It's not always pleasant, I'm not going to lie, but because it's 2 hours. Hopefully security is not 2 hours. But are you guys planning anything like that? Or is it just the safety videos to watch over and over?
Well, they've already told me. They have a watered-down version of CNN, which still gets complaints. But the idea is it's because people don't like politics
what
in their
cartoons?
Waiting.
We could go with that, right?
Our idea with a security checkpoint is to get you through as quickly as possible.
So you don't have to be entertained.
So you don't have to be entertained. Correct.
Yeah.
So let me ask you, why aren't there, or are there, standards? We've talked about it. I've been through a lot of airports in my life, and none of them seem to be the same. So, you would think that there would be some kind of typical way that these are set up so that, security is done well or it is efficient. But it seems to me that there's all manner of different designs that, I'm sure they all can work, but you would think that it would make it a little simpler for the traveling public if they were a little more uniform.
Yeah,
Bill,
I think
onto something there or no?
You just have to think about this. Most commercial airports in the United States are 60 or 70 years old. And when they were constructed, there was no security at all. Anybody who wanted to could walk right out to the gate. And then you'll remember in the 70s, there were a series of hijackings to Cuba and to other places. And so there was a kind of a fairly low level of security, but still anybody could go through. And then 9/11 happened. And 6 days later, when planes started flying, there was an entirely different type of security, much more invasive. And if you didn't have a ticket, you didn't get through. And airports weren't designed with that in mind. And so think about 3 years later, 4 years later, Richard Reid, the shoe bomber, he's why you can't take a 12-ounce bottle of water with you through the checkpoint anymore. And so And none of these things were anticipated. If they'd been anticipated, they wouldn't have happened, right? And so the older airports who don't have the opportunity to do what we're doing simply don't have the space, really, to accommodate all of this. the TSA, I think, intentionally manages security differently in different places so that you don't get used to one single model. Mm-hmm. So they'll, in over here, you have to take your iPads out. Over here, you don't. They want you to keep
I actually like the individualized experience because I think a lot of times the airport is reflective of that community. Yeah. And I actually kind of like that. So, I mean, I don't always love remembering where I am, especially if you're really tired. Like when we went to Africa and we had to change planes a lot, it got a little bit like, where am I and what country am I in and do I need a passport? But I was grateful for the direct flight that I didn't have to go through customs in another community, that I could do it in Salt Lake.
When we come back, I want to kind of change the focus a little bit to what you're talking about, especially post 9/11. How safety and is a consideration that's built into the design and development of new airports and how we travel today. You're listening to Voices of Reason. Welcome back to Voices of Reason. I am Jason Lee along with Amy Donaldson. And today we're talking about airports and how they're developed differently and hopefully better for all of our traveling public and safety needs. Today we're talking with Bill Wyatt. He is the Executive Director of Airports for Salt Lake City, and Mike Williams, Program Director for Airport Redevelopment at Salt Lake City International Airport. And I wanted to kind of ask you guys about how do you bake security and passenger safety, traveler safety, into the redesign of an entirely new airport, essentially, almost from the ground up. So, Mike, I'll start with you.
It starts from the beginning. I mean, as soon as you start contemplating the design of the airport, security and safety and all of that is one of the first things you have to take into account. So all of the systems, and airport has lots of complicated systems. You know, there's the security access control that gets you around in the building, doors that you can go through, you can't go through, cameras that are keeping track of all kinds of things. And then there's the main security checkpoint and sometimes other checkpoints. So there's a variety of controls that are in place, and those have to be designed from the beginning. And even the doors, you know, security access control systems on doors, which allow the people that are working at the airport to get in and out and keep passengers from going someplace they shouldn't. Mm-hmm. It gets pretty complex because there's a lot of reasons why there's a door. There's safety. If there was a fire or something like that, there's life safety reasons. You know, the door has to operate one way for that. It has to operate another way for security. So pretty complicated. And so you need this whole integrated team of users, the airlines and the airport and everybody else, to determine how that door should operate when it, you know, there's some event going on.
I know when I remember pre-9/11, I remember going up to meet my friends at the gate, you know, and obviously we can't do that anymore. But I also remember when I first moved here that they had just done kind of a redevelopment of the airport and they put in some new places to eat and do. But then 9/11 happens and they were behind where the security checkpoints. So kind of, you know, the idea was that everybody was going to be able to use this. Now they were no longer able to do that. So in kind of midstream, it was what was thought to be an advantage became a mistake because now fewer people are going to be able to use them. How have you changed how you set up airports so that they are for the best use for the traveling public?
Well, I would say in this airport, the work that was done ahead of time to first sample opinion locally about what people wanted was very important and very informative to the airport as they proceeded to seek out the right kind and mix of concessions, food and beverage and retail and so forth. And so when phase one opens in 377 days, which is exactly when it will open, people are going to experience a lot of opportunities that they know from this community, from this region, which is really terrific. Secondly, most of the concessions are, in fact, the food and beverage and retail are post-security because As you know, when you get to the airport, ticket in hand, bag checked in, the first thing you want to do is get through the checkpoint. Mm-hmm. That is just human nature. That's what they want to do. We will have a vastly superior checkpoint experience for passengers in the new airport than we currently do, because we currently have three different checkpoints, and mm-hmm. people get confused about which one to go to. We have one large and, I think, very efficient operation, and then you will step right into this immense plaza area with 45-foot ceilings and a beautiful glass window on the world, and all of these really first-rate concessions right away available to people. The other thing that I think is worth mentioning, because we are in Salt Lake, anybody who's flown in and out of this airport very often no doubt has had the experience of seeing these enormous crowds in the exit lanes as they come out. With signs and everything else, right. waiting for primarily returning missionaries, but maybe military as well. And I, as a relative newcomer to the area, it was extraordinary to see that for the first few times, and it's a very sweet experience. Nevertheless, it can clog up the exit lane sometimes. And so the airport thoughtfully designed a special place for that to occur in the primary exit lane of the airport. And I think it's a really unique thing and not something you're going to see anywhere else in the country.
Can you tell us, is there anything else like that? Like you said, bring the beauty of Utah to the airport. Is there some kind of outdoor park in the, how did you bring the beauty of Utah to the airport?
The inside of the building is all warm colors. So, you know, you bring in the natural light, you have windows. So all you have to, Utah, you just look out the window and there's a mountain mm-hmm. right there. Mm-hmm. So you can experience it that way. Inside the building, like I said, there's a lot of warm colors, a lot of copper colors, those kind of things. We have an art installation in the central spine, which we call the canyon, which is reminiscent of a canyon. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of little points like that throughout the facility that we, you know, have intentionally made it so that you would know you're in Utah.
Okay. Any other unique things to this airport?
I would say for traveling women in particular of childbearing age, every women's restroom will, number one, have twice as many stalls as the men's restroom, more mm-hmm. than, actually.
Which is, you'd think that happened already, but it's not true.
Yeah. And also, every one of them will have a private lactation room, nice. Which is not something you find often in airports, but more and more women of childbearing age who have children at home are traveling and need to express milk, mm-hmm. and really it's not very easy today to travel that way. So,
try doing it when I did it 25 years ago. It was even worse. What about family restrooms or, you know, people who have disabilities mm-hmm. that need larger changing areas or something like that? Is there anything like that?
Yeah, every one of our restroom nodes, men's and women's, has baby changing facility in it. We have a restroom in each of those restroom nodes that's an individual restroom or a family restroom or a companion restroom, whatever you want to call it. We just call it the restroom.
It's just a private restroom mm-hmm. where that whatever mm-hmm. need you have can be accommodated.
I mean, you could be traveling with a child, an infant, for example, and you just got to have a door to shut, right, so that mm-hmm. you can do your business and not have to worry about your child mm-hmm. running around, mm-hmm. right?
I want to come back in a second, but I want to ask you in the last segment, you know, again, and I don't want to belabor this idea, but to me, since 9/11, you know, passenger safety has been, it's the first thing I think of when I go to the airport, because I know it's the thing that's going to create the most, and I don't mean this in a bad way, the most hassle, because it's what you have to go through. You know, you have to make sure. For the last two times I've traveled, stupidly, I have brought I didn't check a bag, and I thought I was going to check it, and I didn't, so I had to throw stuff away. Because you can't, Richard, you know, you can't take a full bottle of body wash or, you know, whatever, you got lotion or whatever. What kinds of things are going to help us travel better in the years ahead, either in design elements or the way that you can tell us that we'll travel and make our experience better and, you know, again, go more toward that idea of being, you know, in the safest environment we can be given the circumstances that we're in. And we'll talk about that when we come back. You're listening to Voices of Reason. Welcome back to Voices of Reason. I am Jason Lee, along with Amy Donaldson. Today we're talking about airport travel, and we're speaking with Bill Wyatt. He's the Executive Director of Airports for Salt Lake City, and Mike Williams, Program Director for the Airport Redevelopment Project out at Salt Lake International Airport. And I, as we were leaving before, I wanted to talk again kind of how do we make the traveling public understand what needs to happen to make the traveling experience the safest and most efficient it can be. And also, what kinds of things, you know, do you feel as though that you've thought about that are going to help us in our experience? So, Bill, I'm going to start with you.
Okay. Well, I think the we are somewhere in the neighborhood of 5 years away from really significant new checkpoint technology. And I'll give you an example. Today, you put your bag and your various belongings that you've divested in a tray, and they go through an X-ray machine. And frankly, even though they've dressed it up a little, the technology is probably 30 years old. The TSA is about to begin slowly deploying machines, computerized tomography machines, CT machines. So if you've ever had a CT scan, mm-hmm. an MRI, these are the same things. And eventually, their ability to detect what's inside your bag is really going to be extraordinary, which means two things. You will have to divest less. You can just leave it in the bag. And number two, you're not getting anything by them because they have a list of 170 or so things that they're looking for, either compounds or physical items. And they'll actually have algorithms that'll just automatically find those. They can take the bag and on a screen and turn it around and pull it apart and look at it without actually having to touch it. And that'll do two things. It makes that checkpoint safer, because they're identifying everything there. And it also makes it faster, which is really important for airports because most airports can't do what we're doing. We're mm-hmm. building a new one. And a lot of airports just don't have the ability to expand their checkpoints, which means the lines are just going to get longer unless technology improves. It's also important to note that technology isn't everything. And so continued passenger education is very, very important. You know, the most effective security device that we have in the airport today is a dog, a sniffing dog. We have not managed to find technology that can do a better job than these remarkable
Mother Nature's
canines.
Dogs. That's
it's
right.
It's
yeah.
pretty amazing. Yeah. So it takes all of that to become effective. But these new technologies that are rolling out are a real generational change in airport checkpoints.
I can see that with the CT thing because part of what takes so long is I joke about it, but you have to get undressed basically to go through, and you have to load all your stuff. I mean, when I pick a line, I'm looking like, that guy doesn't have very much clothing on. I'm going to get in line behind him, right? And then that turns out to be the guy who gets stuck, you know. But or the mom who has Cheerios and, you know, the lactation stuff and medications and all the stuff. So you're like, don't pick that. Because they have to take all of it out.
Yeah.
It's not that they're doing anything wrong. It's just they're having things that have to be manually checked.
You can imagine what the airport is like when the essential oils thing
right?
is happening here. It's unbelievable, both just from how it smells at the airport, which is kind of nice,
yeah,
but
yeah.
what it does to the checkpoint.
Are there any – so one thing, just recently this thing about snacks was an issue. Are there things that are new or that are changing that people should be aware of as far as security until we get all the new stuff?
Mike, any new things you need to know about?
The biggest emphasis on security today to be able to get you through quickly, besides the new equipment that Bill is talking about in the future, is, you know, today you go to some airports and they have automatic screening lanes. So more than one person can take their stuff mm-hmm. and put it in a tub and get ready to go through and go through as soon as you're ready. We're just trying to make it more efficient.
So when you say automatic screening, are those clear? Is it something like that? Or is
no,
that what
these
you mean?
Are, these are lanes where the bins, for example, automatically return.
Oh, I
and
see.
You pull them
okay.
up and there are three
so
or
not,
four
So you're
locations.
Not pre-cleared. You're just, it just makes everything more
faster,
automated rather
right.
than me trying
so
to.
So if you step up behind the mom with four kids who's struggling
juggling,
and whatever else,
yeah.
you can go to one of the other little locations right there.
Gotcha.
And, right.
Yeah, yeah. Or help. I've been that mom, so I tend to be like, let me help you out here.
I love that.
I got you.
Thank you.
Where are we going to be able to go? Like, if this is bigger and better, are there places that we can't go now that we're going to be able, that are going to be open to us?
Well, there are. I mean, one of the reasons we're building this new airport is that we're just full. If a new airline came to me today and said, we'd like to offer a new service, we just have to say, I'm sorry, we have no space. Unless you're flying out at 3 in the morning, mm-hmm. We're full. And, of course, all the carriers want to leave at exactly the same time during the day.
11 a.m.
Yeah, exactly. So
and get me there at 12, by the way.
We're building 6 international gates that are specially designed for the requirements of international travel. So they'll have a sterile corridor all the way to the federal inspection station where you clear immigration and customs and all of that. But Delta has not kept the best secret in the world about their desire to fly to Asia from Salt Lake. Mm-hmm. They're moving their Asian hub. It's currently at Narita Airport in Japan to Incheon Airport, which is outside of Seoul, Korea, and is mm-hmm. one of the world's great airports. And also,
I flew in there for the Olympics.
The connectivity there is incredible throughout China and Central and South Asia. So that would be extraordinary, and that will really open things up. I also, even though we have a fair amount of European service now, we don't really have any of the specialty carriers, Iceland Air, Condor, others, who would struggle today because we just don't really have the ability to handle them. So I see more of that. I see more South and Central America, and Delta has talked about that. They own 49% of Aeromexico and Mexico City. I think they see as a developing hub for South and Central America, not to mention Mexico itself. And then because of different plane types that are coming into the market, the Embraer 175, which is it's a 110-seat aircraft, that has a much greater range than the regional jets that we have become so accustomed to seeing here in Salt Lake, a tremendous number of new markets, I think, come into play. I'll give you a good example. Little Rock, Arkansas. Mm-hmm. It's not a big market, but it's far enough away so that you can't do it with a regional jet and you wouldn't take a 737. And that's not a market that we currently have, but it's one that I could see.
Okay.
In my goal to get to all 50 states, I have yet to go to Arkansas. So when that happens, I may be one of the people getting on that plane. So, yeah. You know, look, I really appreciate you guys getting up and coming.
I do have
one
more question
about
actual logistics.
Okay.
Is there a gym or any kind of, like, I know we have a spa. There's a place to get a massage and to do your work. But is there a place, like, if you wanted to go walk on a treadmill
and watch? Do they have showers?
Yeah.
There's a shower in
you could do that if you had a tiny gym.
Not in the public area. Delta is building a huge sky club here. It's going to be 27,000 square feet. It'll have an outdoor deck, so it'll have an outdoor space of another 2,000 square feet. And they do have some shower facilities and things like that. So you can definitely get a massage, but not a shower out in the public area.
The A Concourse is going to be 3/4 of a mile long, so you can just walk back and forth a few times.
All the exercise.
The only problem I have with that, because I've done that when I've had long layovers, just to stretch my legs, because sometimes when you're flying, like when I went to the Olympics, it's like you feel like you're flying for 3 or 4 days. You're not, but it's time zones. Is that people are trying to travel and drag bags, and I don't want to be a jerk and be like, you're killing my pace. You know, I want to be helpful and accommodating. I think that attitude is everything when you travel. So, but I would like a treadmill or play. Like I love, I join these gyms that are chains so that I can go and work out and shower in the cities I go to. But that might be, come on, Planet Fitness or 24 Hour Fitness. Hit up Mike and get us a facility to work out and shower.
I just want to say that when I went to Brisbane, the reason I was able to leave the airport and go see the city was because they had a shower. You had to pay for it. But, I mean, it was so worth it after, being traveling for so long. And it was in one of the public areas. So I'm just throwing that out there.
You know,
it's easy for me to say because I don't have to
spend any of that money.
Right, right. But again, I am very grateful to you that you guys
I'm
were
I'm sure everybody does this to you. You know what I want at the airport?
Yes. This is what you should be doing. This is we're telling you how to do your jobs. It's like you don't know how to do it.
You know, I think airports actually could learn from children's hospitals. I actually think everyone could learn from children's hospitals. If you've ever spent time in a children's hospital, mm-hmm. they do so much to accommodate you because you're sitting and waiting in the most uncomfortable chairs humanly possible. They're sort of like airport chairs. But they have sleeping rooms. They have places to take showers. They have places to get food 24 hours a day. And it's just the accommodations that they make there. I mean, I'm telling you, I've spent a lot of time in hospitals this summer, as everyone knows. But with my dad, totally different universe. They're like, you're on your own. Sorry, you're suffering, you know.
But if you're a kid, they got you helping out.
Yeah, but children's hospitals like acknowledge that this is you're better at taking care of your kid if you're not miserable.
Well, all right. Listen, again, thank you both very much. And hopefully in about a year, we'll be having this conversation again with the first phase of the new airport being open.
And it's totally done in 2024, did you say? Or hopefully?
That's somewhere thereabouts, yeah.
Okay.
Somewhere thereabouts.
The buildings will be.
Maybe 2025 for our
maybe
for our
some
showers.
Pavement to be done.
Our public showers. Come on, private businesses. You
join
can
us
do
again
it.
For the next episode of the Loudmouth Project's Voices of Reason. If you have comments about our show, please email us at vorjasonl@gmail.com or at vramed@gmail. You can also find us on Twitter at ADonSports and at JasonLee1. You can also find us on Facebook and all the other places you want to find on social media. And you can also find our podcast at Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, or other places where you might find interesting content. Until next time, I'm Jason Lee. When you engage in passionate debate, do your best to keep your dialogue civil. Try to be the voice of reason.
Voices of Reason is a production of the Loudmouth Project.
Two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.